Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It is Monday, November 18th. This is The Rants. I'm Jeff. How is it November 18th? What the hell? All right. Week 11 almost done. That was a wild day of football, wasn't it? Pretty crazy. Scoring was up. Tight ends scoring like crazy. Well, two of them in particular. So let's unpack everything so we can set you up here for week 12. Stretch run. Not quite an endgame phase for me, but we're getting pretty darn close. We'll start with Green Bay and Chicago. Last week, I had said I'd never seen, and I know it probably has happened before, but I had never really seen it, at least in my peanut-sized brain's memory, a blocked field goal for a win. Well, now I've seen it twice in 2 weeks because the Packers blocked the Bears' attempt to win that game. The key, though, the Bears were attempting to win that game. The Bears were in this thing. They looked better. Did they look amazing? Well, no, not necessarily, but they definitely looked better. Caleb Williams looked comfortable. Was he amazing? No, not necessarily, but the key was he looked comfortable. Throwing the ball around the yard, running a little bit. Well, actually, more than just a little bit. And I think this was the dynamic to his game that we really haven't seen much of this season. He ends up going 9 for 70. DeAndre Swift continues to be effective on the ground as well, 14 for 71 in the touchdown. But, you know, I think Caleb Williams, super flex wise, yes. I don't know if he ends up working his way into the one quarterback streamer range by the end of this season. But I think the key just in general is the trajectory for next year. Like the kiss of death for a lot of these quarterbacks, like Daniel Jones is one of them. You know, we saw it with Mariota. We saw it with Jameis. We saw it with like Trubisky, guys like that, is they just don't get better. Justin Fields, they just don't get better. And you have to. Like the opposite of that is Josh Allen. Like he consistently got better, and now obviously he's a superstar. So hopefully Caleb Williams improves through the course of the season. That way our trajectory is heading in the right direction for next year. Roma Dunze, I think the arrow is pointing up here. 10 targets for Roma Dunze, 6 for 65, 7 for 62 for DJ Moore. That was like a midpoint game. He never has midpoint games, so that actually is encouraging. And I'll tell you what I think is probably the most interesting thing out of the Bears in general. It was how the receivers were used, because the ball was out of Caleb's hand faster in this game. You know, a lot of people were saying, oh, the offensive line. No, I don't think the offensive line was the problem. I think that the receivers were covered. I think that's it. And it was because Shane Waldron had no creativity with the routes. And there was a little bit more here. Not crazy. You know, Thomas Brown didn't reinvent the wheel or anything like that. But things looked a little bit better. Now, we'll see. You know, 1 week can be... it could be a fluke. We'll see if this continues going forward. But I didn't mind that for Roma Dunze. All right, moving over to the other side. So wasn't a heavy volume day, so don't worry too much here. Jordan Love threw the ball 17 times. Now, he threw the ball 17 times, but 261 yards. Did have a passing score, obviously ran for a score, so he was fine. Jacobs got in the end zone as a runner, 4 for 58 as a pass catcher, but a couple weird stat lines. So Jaden Reed barely did anything, but at least he scored a touchdown. Dobbs did nothing, but I'm not dropping Dobbs if I have him. I know that's the knee-jerk reaction a lot of people will have, and I'm not going to be able to convince him otherwise, but he's still the lead receiver in terms of route usage. Like, he's the every-down guy. He just doesn't have the ceiling of Watson or Reed. As far as Watson... 4 for 150. I mean, come on, like that's a Watson stat line. So yes, he should be rostered, but realize he's extremely volatile. All right, let's move on to the next game here. Jacksonville, Detroit. I don't have really anything on Jacksonville. Apparently Doug Peterson is still there. I don't know if he's going to be fired this week or not, but that was not the game to keep your job with. They got absolutely smoked in this one. Boat raced, whatever you want to say. They got it in this one. Looks like Gabe Davis will be out for the season as well, so their receivers are dropping like flies. If anything, you know, Brian Thomas was fine, so there's that. He had 5 for 82, but otherwise not much doing there. On the other side, this is how you follow up a 5-interception game. Jared Goff became the first quarterback since Joe Namath in 1967 to have a perfect passer rating after a 5-plus interception game. Okay. Jared Goff has been really awesome this season, and most of the time it hasn't hit for fantasy, but obviously when you throw for 400 yards and four passing touchdowns, you're going to hit for fantasy. He even ran for 21 yards. Like, this was a great game for Goff. Monty in the end zone twice, Gibbs in the end zone, Amon-Ra, 11 catches on 11 targets. All he does is catch the football. It's so incredible. Like, I mean, first and foremost, for all the targets to be on target, right, catchable, is something. Now, he's not getting super high air yards targets, but still, he doesn't drop them. I mean, 11 for 161 and 2, awesome game for him. J-Mo got going 4 for 124 and a score. We know he's a little bit more boom or bust, and obviously it did help with no Laporta out there, but still, this was just a fantasy bonanza for the Detroit Lions. Moving on to Minnesota and Tennessee, I hope, you know, for any managers out there of Sam Darnold, now primarily Superflex managers, but still you stayed the course because he's really not bad. And I'll keep going back to what I said. Like, he made aggressive throws that were picked off last week. Okay. You know, I would rather that than just bonehead mistakes. Now, you can't do too many aggressive throws that are picked off, like a Jameis Winston type thing. But no, it wasn't bad then. This game looked really sharp, 246 and 2. The two going to Addison, and of course, why not? Cam Akers. Ugh. I think Aaron Jones was still dinged up here because we did see a little bit more Akers than I expected. I doubt that sticks going forward, but we'll monitor it. I don't think Akers deserves to be on fantasy rosters. I mean, he went 10 for 25 on the ground, and the Titans did defend the run well. Jefferson, 6 for 81. Kind of a floor game. You know, he hasn't scored many touchdowns in the middle part of the season, but he's a ticking time bomb, so I'm not overly concerned there. And he continues to rack up the yardage, so that at least helps. Over to the other side, again, Will Levis. Now, he only had a 55% completion rate, but it was another decent game. And I think that's the most important thing right now. First and foremost, for our purposes, yeah, maybe he plays himself into super flex territory. But more importantly for the Titans, maybe he plays them into a situation where they don't need to draft a quarterback. Now, I don't want to get there yet because I don't think we are there yet, but we could be there. You know, there's still plenty of time left in the regular season. You know, we're talking a month and a half of games. We could be there by the end of the season. We'll see. Like, technically right now, if the draft was today, they'd have the number 2 overall pick. The Jags have the number 1. They would not be taking a quarterback. So you're talking, you have your pick. You know, if you like Cam Ward, now that's not to say the Jags won't trade out of that spot. They could, but you'd still have an opportunity to get a quarterback if you want one. Now, of course, it's always better if you don't have to draft a quarterback in the first round. Always better there, but, you know, we'll see what ends up happening. I'm not going to read too much into Nick Westbrook-Ikhine's line. This is a Marquez Valdes-Scantling line, 2 for 117 and a touchdown. And we'll get to your precious Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Don't worry. Ridley, 4 for 58. Not terrible. Obviously not good for fantasy. But I'm encouraged to see midpoint games, just like DJ Moore. Like, I'd rather see more midpoint games than just like 1 for 12 or 3 for 150, right? Like, I want to see something in the middle. I'm trying to look at it logically. I know that doesn't help people win fantasy matchups, but I'm trying to find the bright spot here. And I think there were some encouraging things. They couldn't get anything done on the ground against the Vikings. The Vikings are really, really good against the run. All right, moving on to the next game, Vegas and Miami. Let's start on the Vegas side. So somebody on Twitter was like, are you willing to admit that Brock Bowers is the best tight end in the NFL? And I said, no, because George Kittle is, but Bowers is close. He's on pace not only to break the rookie receptions record for tight ends, he's on pace to break the single season tight end receptions record. He had 13 catches in this game for 126 and a touchdown. I'm still over a month away from doing rankings for 2025, my first batch. He's going to be number one. You know, yes, I love George Kittle, but when I talk about tight ends, I'm not talking about fantasy. I'm talking about like George Kittle in the trenches. He's the most complete tight end in the NFL. But Bowers is an elite pass catching tight end. Now, he was at the college level, so this shouldn't be a huge surprise. But he, as of right now, will be the number one fantasy tight end in 2025. Hands down. And right now, it's hard to not see him as the top fantasy tight end in 2024. I love George Kittle as a player. George Kittle is very consistent. Obviously, he didn't play this week. But, you know, we look at Kelsey. He got downside with Kelsey. You look at Laporta. He didn't hit this year. You know, I still think he's going to be a good player over the long term for the dynasty heads out there. But he didn't hit. Mark Andrews came back to the pack, obviously too inconsistent, and doesn't have this type of ceiling. TJ Hockenson maybe gets back there, but obviously this week was tough, and I didn't even mention him in the previous game because he didn't do much of anything. Brock Bowers is the real deal. Over to the other side, Jonnu Smith, also elite. No, I kid. But this was a huge game, and I'll tell you probably the most important thing for Jonnu Smith and why I think he does deserve to be on fantasy rosters isn't because of this game. It's not just a reaction to this game. Since week five, here are his targets. 8, 7, 6, 6, 4, 8. Any, like, six or more targets in a game for a tight end is rock solid. And so he did that in five of the last six games, six or more. That's good. You know, and I said Tua doesn't use his tight end, and maybe that was just because he didn't have a tight end. Like, if you have like a Mike Gesicki or somebody like that, Jonnu gives you a little bit more. So really encouraging there. Achane rocking here, 17 for 73 in the touchdown, and then contributing in the passing game, 4 for 32. Tyreek in the end zone, 7 for 61 and the score. The one thing is Jalen Waddle only 2 for 37. I had somebody tell me they were going to drop him. Okay, you can drop him, but keep this in mind. This offense is not robust enough to produce more than like three guys most weeks with good fantasy numbers. And the three guys this week were Hill, Achane, and Jonnu. Waddle was the odd man out. Doesn't mean Waddle's always going to be this. We know this hasn't been the best season for him, but he still has a ceiling. I wouldn't be dropping a guy like that just to hand him to my opponents, because we know how this works out. We've all read this story, right? We've seen this happen before in fantasy. Let's say you drop Jalen Waddle this week. Somebody's going to pick him up. You know that. Somebody's going to pick him up. So they pick him up. And here's how this story ends for you. You will face the team that picked Jalen Waddle up in week 15, the first week of the playoffs for most of us. You'll face that team, and they will beat you because Jalen Waddle will go off. You know it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. Everybody knows it's going to happen. We've all seen this story before, and it happens all the time. So, I wouldn't do it because of that. And because, I mean, hey, there's no reason to do it. All right, Rams and New England Patriots. On the Rams side, this is how it should have been all along. It's easy, right? Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua should just go off every single week. They should have done it every single week in 2024, and all would have been right with the world. 7 for 123 and a touchdown for Puka Nacua. 6 for 106 and two touchdowns for Cooper Kupp. Matthew Stafford tossing four touchdowns. I mean, the only thing that didn't go right necessarily is Kyron Williams gave us a Derek Dilemma game. 15 for 86. I've been saying that a lot, you know, and when I talk about Derek Dilemma, it's a good football day, but a bad fantasy day, right? Because all he got was 8.6. He didn't have any catches. He didn't score a touchdown. I want to underscore, like, Derek Dilemma is not a bad thing. And that's really, really important to underscore. When I say Derek Dilemma, I'm pointing out the player had a good football day. And really, for me, first and foremost, is good football. Great. He could go out, have a crappy football day, but for some reason, Marquez Valdez-Scantling put up major points, right? Awesome. That's going to lead a lot of fantasy managers to think that that player is better than what they really are. Now, the other side of that, the Derek Dilemma concept, a lot of fantasy managers would look like, you know, they're going to look at Kyron Williams and say, well, he didn't have a good game. And the reality is, dude averaged 5.7 yards per carry. He had a good game. Unfortunately, Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp and then Colby Parkinson had the other touchdown, ate all the touchdowns up, and he didn't need to do anything in the passing game, really. So it wasn't a good fantasy day. The Derek Dilemma concept actually means a good thing, not a bad thing, even though the fantasy results weren't what we were looking for. That's key. Over to the other side, Drake May, man, 282 and 2. I really like watching this kid play. He did get extra help here with Kendrick Bourne catching a touchdown as well. Ramondre did at least catch some balls here, so he got to double-digit PPR points, 20 for 73 and then 4 for 16. All right, let's move on to Cleveland and New Orleans. And, well, there's a lot to talk about here. Let's talk about Taysom Hill first and foremost. This is not new for Taysom Hill. if you've listened to me all along, I've said how many times, like, Taysom Hill any given week could be far and away the top tight end, or he could be like tight end 25. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. But he goes 7 for 138 and 3, not as a pass catcher, as a runner. And then as a pass catcher, he goes 8 for 50. He like reversed the, you know, 8 for 50 is what he should have ran for, but whatever. I don't care. It was one of the biggest tight end performances of the season. And yes, it's a high watermark. Now, there's a tendency among fantasy managers to simply assume that if you did it last week, you will always do it. And that could be good or bad. Like, if you have an amazing week, then you're always going to have amazing weeks. And if you had a really crappy week, then you're always going to have really crappy weeks. And that's just not true. That's not football. That's not how this stuff works. This was the high watermark. Now, fortunately, a lot of folks over at FTNFantasy.com saw that I had him ranked at 5. And, you know, I had some people saying, like, dude, I thought you were crazy, and which is true, but not with regards to this. In fact, I was too low on Taysom Hill at 5. But I thought you were crazy, but I did it anyway. Well, good. You did it anyway, and you were rewarded as a result. So good stuff there with Taysom Hill. Monster, monster game. Mark was about a Scantling. And we'll talk more about Taysom Hill tomorrow because, yes, he'll be in the top 10 of waiver recommendations. It's already updated over at FTNFantasy.com. Valdez Scantling had another long touchdown. 2 for 87 and a touchdown. He has 5 catches over the last 2 weeks. He has 7 targets over the last 2 weeks. Like, by comparison, Taysom Hill had 8 catches and 10 targets in this game alone. Now, it's not to say he can't do this again. This is what Marquez Valdez Scantling does. He has long touchdowns. This is the 5th time he's had a touchdown of 70 plus yards since 2019. But let's think of it another way. If he doesn't have the long touchdowns, how often does he score short touchdowns? How often does he have a 10 target game? Those don't happen very frequently. And when we live by the sword, we die by the sword. When we live by long touchdowns, we die by those as well, because they're not very likely to happen. Now, you can do whatever you want. If you want to roster him, you want to start him, of course, do it. But it's really risky. It's really risky. Kamara, volume game, not the best fantasy outing, but, you know, those will happen. Moving to the other side. So Jerry Jeudy blew up, 6 for 142 and a touchdown. He's been in the waiver recommendations for the last several weeks. So hopefully if you grabbed him, even if you didn't start him, like, this is encouraging. He led the team with 11 targets. He actually looked like the Jerry Jeudy we thought he was going to be when he came in from the college level. And we only saw glimpses of that in his time with Denver. That was college Jerry Jeudy. And it was awesome. It was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, he's not going to have that kind of upside every single week, but he's going to continue to see volume. So is Njoku, 9 for 81. So is Elijah Moore, 6 for 66 and a touchdown. Now, Tillman showed us, yeah, he's a wide receiver 3. He didn't put up wide receiver 3 numbers this week, but when I say you're a wide receiver 3, it doesn't mean you're going to finish 30th among wide receivers every week. It means your range of outcomes, that's the midpoint. Like, he goes 3 for 47 here. But next week, he could go out and did have 8 targets, by the way. Next week, he could have 7 catches for a 110 and a touchdown. You know, it all depends. And obviously, well, it's a quick turnaround for them here. That's why Nick Chubb didn't really do much of anything, according to the team. It is a tough stretch run for the Browns. Just be aware of that. All right. So if you're, you know, don't get too crazy over Jameis Winston. Here are their next 4 games: home against Pittsburgh, at Denver, at Pittsburgh, home against Kansas City. That's rough. That's rough right there. That is sandpaper rough. Indianapolis and the Jets. Well, Anthony Richardson, this was the version I think we all hoped we were going to see for most of the season. I will say, though, bro, on your first touchdown run, you had to lower your throwing shoulder. The shoulder that you injured last year that put you out for the entire season, you had to lower that shoulder. Could we not just figure out another way to do this? I mean, he does score the 2 rushing touchdowns, 272 and 1. I'll tell you this, though. Passing-wise, it was the best I've seen him as a pro. You know, he didn't throw for 8 touchdowns or anything like that. Didn't throw for 300 yards, but it was the best I've seen him as a pro. Very encouraging. Jonathan Taylor got shut down in this one. It's going to happen from time to time. Josh Downs continues to be the best fantasy asset, 5 for 84 and a touchdown. But Michael Pittman had 8 targets, led the team. 5 for 46. I know, not great, but at least encouraging signs there. To the other side, Breece was awesome. 16 for 78 and a touchdown on the ground, 7 for 43 and a touchdown as a pass catcher. He was awesome. Otherwise, it was kind of rough going. I mean, I guess Davante Adams was fine playing through. You know, he was injured slash ill during the week, but 6 for 72 is okay. It was the Garrett Wilson, you know, 4 for 18 line that was definitely concerning. But what can you do at this point? There's really not much we can do. And most of us, hopefully your trade deadlines are passed because it's so late in the fantasy season to be trading. But anyway, I don't know, man. A lot of dink and dunk in that offense. I'd love to see them have some more vertical. Like, just get Wilson a little vertical here and there. I know it's not common the way that he's often used, but you know, maybe we could see some of that. Anyway, let's move on to Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Oh, boy. Hope you like field goals, man. Pittsburgh, 6 field goals to win the game. Russ was not perfect, but he did enough when it mattered to help the team win against a tough Ravens. You know, the Ravens pass defense was not good this season, but let's call it a tough Ravens team. You know, they played really tough against Russ, picked him off at a crucial moment as well. But the good news is in a game like this, George Pickens still goes 8 for 89 on 12 targets like that. So that is the opposite of the Marquez Valdez Scantling thing. If like we saw that out of MVS, I'd be like, OK, I have to change my tune on this dude. But Pickens is a true alpha out there, and Najee doing well as well, catching 4 balls for 30 yards, 18 for 63. It wasn't the best game, but you know, when you touch the ball 22 times, it is certainly good enough for fantasy to get to double digit points and all that. So don't mind it. Over to the other side, it was a tough one for Lamar. He does score, he threw for a passing score. He doesn't score as a runner, but he did go 4 for 46. Derrick Henry extended his touchdown streak. Zay Flowers got in the end zone. But overall, it was a tough day for the Ravens. I don't suspect a lot of these or expect a lot of these tough games going forward. At least, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is the one team that seems to have figured them out. Chargers are not necessarily easy next week, but they did just give up, 27 to the Bengals. The Eagles is going to be an interesting game in week 13. They have a week 14 bye, but the first round of the playoffs, you get the Giants. Then you get the Steelers in week 16. So, let's move on. Next game on the list, another surprising one. I did not expect Denver to be this good, and I'm kind of happy about it. Denver 38-6 over the Falcons. Better days will be ahead for the Falcons, I hope. But I'm not freaking out if I have Bijan. I'm not freaking out if I have Darnell Mooney. I think we know where we are on Kyle Pitts. Unfortunately, he's just going to be up and down. He plays tight end, and I didn't think he was going to be a quintessential tight end. I thought he would be a Brock Bowers type coming into the league. No, he's a quintessential tight end. That could change. I don't think it's written in stone, but that's what he is now, which means he's basically a streamer. In some weeks, he'll be good, but some weeks he won't. Bo Nix has been good. 307-4. Completed 85% of his passes. Didn't do any running in this one, but didn't need to. The four going to Marvin Mims, Troy Franklin, Nate Adkins, and Lil Jordan Humphrey, just like we drew it up. But at least Cortland Sutton did get 7 for 78. As far as the backfield, it looks like Peyton's just going to go back and forth with who he sees the most viable in each game, because this was Javonte Williams, not only from a carry standpoint, but he significantly out-snapped Audric Estime. But he goes 9 for 59. And the touchdown here in terms of participation, 32 snaps for Williams, just 13 for Estime. No, I don't think we drop Audric Estime already. But, and it's weird because the two big games for Williams now, not that this was a massive game, but the two big games for him have been in matchups against NFC South. And we know that Peyton knows the NFC South. I don't know. Interesting. Not going to read too much into it. All right, moving on to the next contest, Seattle, San Francisco. Geno Smith, huge at the end there. The rushing touchdown to win this darn game, 4 for 29 and a score as a runner, 221 and a pick as a passer. But really, here's what I'm seeing with the passing game, because we heard Jaxon Smith-Njigba was going to be more involved. And guess what? He's been more involved. And this wasn't just because DK Metcalf wasn't out there, because he was. Metcalf 7 for 70, Smith-Njigba 10 for 110 on 11 targets. You're looking right now at the next Amon-Ra type. Now, I'm not saying he's Amon-Ra. Don't get all angry at me, Lions fans. But you have the next legit alpha slot receiver in the NFL right now. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is a star in the making. And we've seen it over the last 2 weeks. It's only going to continue. Now there's a problem, though, dear listener. There is a problem. Tyler Lockett's star is fading. Now he's older. It isn't a surprise, but expect this to somewhat continue going forward, where it's more Metcalf and Smith and Jigba, and it's less Lockett, and it's going to be hard to use Lockett as a result. Oh, by the way, DK Metcalf on the field, Kenneth Walker scores a touchdown. Not a surprise for me. Over to the other side, McCaffrey tops 20 touches, tops 100 scrimmage yards, doesn't have the best outing, but I'm still encouraged by, you know, where we are now, 2 games into his return. Hopefully you picked up Juwan Jennings. He's somehow out there in still just under 70% of leagues, but he's their lead receiver. 10 for 91 and a touchdown, and he was open all day. He's making plays all day. He looks way better than last year. Like, really, and I'm talking about the overall body of work from this season, way better than last year. And I think people saw what I meant about Ricky Pearsall. And it's not a knock on Ricky Pearsall. I like Ricky Pearsall a lot. But when you have Christian McCaffrey, who had 5 targets, when you have Deebo Samuel, who had 7 targets, when you have Juwan Jennings, who had 11 targets, and hey, we didn't even have Kittle out there, but there just isn't enough meat on the bone to go around. Purdy threw the ball 28 times, 2 targets to Pearsall. That's it. It's great that he scored a longer touchdown last week, but there's volatility there. And I mean, we can't just take one long touchdown and then, extrapolate that over the course of the entire season and then claim that he's like a wide receiver 2 or 3, you know, just not doable. All right. Next game on the list coming down the home stretch here, Kansas City, Buffalo. Can't they all be like this? What a game. Josh Allen put the team on his back at the end and said, no, they're not getting back in this thing, and I'm going to ice it. And I will tell you, do yourself this favor. Watch the touchdown run again. Watch what you see on the touchdown run from Josh Allen in the fourth quarter. Was an absolute thing of beauty, not from him, the play call itself. You're going to see a tightly bunched formation, right? You have everybody essentially in on the line of scrimmage. I'm looking at Amari Cooper bunched in. You have Dawson Knox bunched in there. Khalil Shakir is actually in the backfield, which that was cool. I didn't notice that the first time. You have Mac Hollins next to Dawson Knox. Then also in the backfield, in addition, you have Josh back there, and then Ty Johnson was in on the play. So they're all bunched in. And then when the play runs, you're going to see all of the guys sort of scatter. And when you do, you'll watch Kansas City is so disciplined that they cover everybody. And it opens up like the parting of the Red Sea for Josh Allen. Now, he still had to make a play at the second level. You made more than a play. You made several plays at the second level to get in. But it's the initial. So I'm going to tell, like, he gets how many yards here based on just the play design itself. I'm going to say he easily gets 10 yards based on the play design. He makes the play with the last two guys, the last two defenders to get in the end zone. It's a thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty. Joe Brady, nice play call on that one. The game was awesome, though. It was just awesome. Josh Allen puts up some big-time numbers, obviously, as a runner, 12 for 55 in the touchdown. James Cook scored twice. He was heavily involved in the passing game, so despite only having 20 rushing yards, ends up being a really good fantasy day because he had five points for receptions, only 7 yards as a receiver, but still ends up being a good fantasy day. If I were to tell you James Cook's going to have 27 scrimmage yards, he'd probably be running away from that, but no, not bad. Amari Cooper's role is continuing to expand. He only caught 2 for 55, but I think we're going to just keep seeing that expand as we go forward here. Khalil Shakir, 8 for 70 on 12 targets with no Dalton Kincaid. Over to the other side, it is unfortunate. I mean, really, we didn't get much out of anybody except like Noah Gray. Somehow Patrick Mahomes has 3 touchdowns in this one, 3 passing scores. But anyway, I'm not panicking if I have Kelsey. This was a tough game. This was a tough game. And also, Kareem Hunt did average over 4 yards per carry. It's the first time he's done that since the very first week he came in. It was only 4.3, but this will be the last hurrah because the expectation is that Isaiah Pacheco will be back in there as the guy next week. We'll probably, I don't know if they'll ramp him up or not. I mean, usually with those types of injuries, since it's not a soft tissue, they may not really have to, but we'll see. I'm not panicking for Hopkins or Kelce, though, like I said. All right, last game on the list, Cincinnati and the Chargers. And how about it, J.K. Dobbins winning that game at the end with a 29-yard rushing touchdown. Hell of a performance from the Chargers. And, you know, I'll get to lamenting the Bengals in a moment, but Justin Herbert is back as a top 12 in most weeks. I could see him being there. 297 and two, ran five times for 65 yards. Like, this is a big performance out of him. Quentin Johnston scores again. Another game with a touchdown. Not big numbers, 2 for 48, but if he's going to keep scoring touchdowns, we have to pay attention. Ladd McConkey has another 100-yard game, 6 for 123. He's like the new Keenan Allen in this offense, and that's awesome. And how about Will Disley? 4 for 80 and a touchdown. Big-time streamer this week for Will Disley. Over to the other side. I feel really bad for Joe Burrow because he's playing at an MVP caliber. He is. He is. 356 and three. His defense just is not helping him. But you get T. Higgins back in there, 9 for 148 and a touchdown. You get Jamar Chase out there, obviously scoring touchdowns. He scored two more to add to his lead here, 7 for 75. You have Chase Brown giving you bell cow workloads here. 27 touches for Chase Brown, 22 for 86, okay. But then, yeah, let's just chip in 5 for 57 as a pass catcher all day long. I feel bad for Joe Burrow. I really do. And in fact, he did something here that is really crazy. So he's lost three games this season where he's had 300-plus passing yards, 3-plus passing touchdowns, and no interceptions. That is already the most in a season since 1970 merger. Like, no quarterback has had more. And to put this into context, he's done it three times this season. Tom Brady did it twice in his entire 23-year career. That's crazy. And unfortunately, too, like, this was the story for the guy on the other side usually. This was a Justin Herbert thing. Like, what, Justin Herbert would lose the games where his team would put up, you know, 25-plus or 30-plus points and the defense would give it away. So I just feel bad for Burrow. The good news is that doesn't impact us for fantasy. He's still going to keep throwing the ball around the yard. He's very likely going to have a career year here. You know, I certainly think, I mean, we're steamrolling our way towards a career year for passing touchdowns. And he has 27 already. His career best is 35. We're probably steamrolling our way towards a career year for passing yards. 3,028, his career best was 4,611. So he likely, I mean, he's got a shot at both. He should get the touchdowns pretty easily. Like, we could have a 40 touchdown season out of this dude. And then be like a 6-win team. Like, it's just nuts. It's just nuts. Sorry, Bengals fans, because I really like the team. Offensively, really, really like the team. It's just defensively, they just can't keep them in it. All right, that does it for me. At Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky. Also, ftnfantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. Tomorrow I'll be back. We'll talk Monday Night Football. We'll talk injury news. We will talk top 10 waiver ads. I'll catch you on the flip. I'm Jeff, and I'm out.